I want to read something before we do that from the big book. And this is for step one. We are like passengers. This is from There Is a Solution. We are like passengers of a great liner the moment after rescue from shipwreck. Can you hear me? When camaraderie, joyousness, and democracy pervade the vessel from steerage to captain's table. Unlike the feelings of the ship's passengers, however, our joy in escape from disaster does not subside as we go our individual ways. The feeling of having shared a common peril is one element of the powerful cement which binds us. But that in itself never held us together as we are now joined. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. Okay, and then a couple pages over. This is another one of my favorite parts. When you read this book, you can't hardly quit reading. You want to read more and more.
Did you give the page numbers, please?
Yes. Okay. That one I read to you is on page 17. That's right at the first page of There Is a Solution. And then I'm going over to page 25. There is a solution. Almost none of us like the self-searching, the leveling of our pride, the confession of shortcomings which the process requires for its successful consummation, but we saw that it really worked in others, and we had come to believe in the hopelessness and futility of life as we had been living it. When, therefore, we were approached by those whom the problem had been solved, there was nothing left for us but to pick up the simple kit of spiritual tools laid at our feet. We have found much of heaven, and we have been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. And that is, it's not our strengths that bind us together, it's our weaknesses. That's another place in the books. And we share. I read a book, we don't usually talk about books, but I read a book by somebody who was a spiritual leader, but he was saying how much he appreciated the 12 steps programs, and he thought that they were probably the biggest spiritual movement of the 20th century. And one of the reasons he said in those programs there's community. It's like when there is a disaster, Haiti, the whole world is there to be with them, right now. But in those crises, people come and they help one another. But then when the crisis is over, they go back to their homes and they're not there together. So if it weren't for our common peril, we would not keep coming back, right? So we have a common peril and we never forget it because it could. I'm a compulsive overeater and I'm in recovery and I'm not, I really believe I'm recovering. But all I would need to do is take that first bite and I could be off. And we know that. So we're serious, right? Okay, and then we have a solution. So, I've been around other programs and nobody has official tools. I love it. One time I went to a retreat. Poor Stacia, she goes, I dragged her to Southern Oregon from Tacoma because Sister B was going to be leading the retreat. We got halfway down, she said, Karen, I didn't know we were going to drive so far. I said, yep. Anyway, now I'm going to forget what I was going to say. Anyway, we went to the retreat and...
We're talking about tools, we're talking about kind of going to the ends of the earth.
Yeah, that's right, going to any length. But I know. I saw this little pamphlet and it said, you guys, that's my biggest fear is that there's a lot of files in this brain. Kind of like a computer when your files are all full. Takes a while for the computer to find the right file, so you have to be patient with me. Anyway, So when I thought, well, this will be great. I love Sister B. And it was not only her. It was a woman-to-woman for all 12-step programs. And so one night, they asked us all to bring something that was kind of unique for our program. They read different formats, and there was, you know, people from AA, Al-Anon, OA, NA, DA, you know, lots of different programs. And I thought, I'm gonna tell about our tools, because nobody else has official tools, and I think they're great. Can we say the Serenity Prayer again, just to get us all together? Get me all together, maybe. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I'm going to quickly go over the tools and just tell a little bit about my experience. I've already talked a little bit about my plan of eating. When I started, we didn't have a tool of plan of eating. When I started, the tool was abstinence. And as an international fellowship, we have come to believe that abstinence is our goal and that a plan of eating is a tool. And I think that's it's not an easy thing to separate our plan of eating from our abstinence, but everybody has a different one. And I mentioned earlier there that I started out on a plan that was, you know, just fruit and protein for breakfast, and protein and vegetables for lunch, and protein and vegetables for dinner. And that was abstinence for us. And it really worked for me because I had never given up anything, all of the things that turn into sugar quickly in my body. And I found out what it felt like to be not have the physical craving. You know, when in the big book it talks about that alcoholism it's an allergy of the body, and it's also an obsession of the mind. And so we're going to be talking about that more after the break. But that's what I had to find out in my body, what felt like not to be physically craving, and I'm grateful for that. We didn't call it gray sheet in the beginning because it started being called gray sheet a few years later when they used gray paper to print it on. So in the beginning, we didn't use gray paper, so we didn't call it gray sheet. We just called it that was what abstinence was. So over the years, I have had to change my, and I found in 1999 a plan that really works for me, but I needed to use, I found out I got really sick, my stomach got really nauseous, and it blew me away. Every time I have to change my plan of eating, it just scares me to death. Because if I find one that works, I think, oh, don't mess with it, you know. And but I was just nauseous all day long. And I was going to the doctor, and they had to run all the kinds of tests. And they just increased my stomach medicine. But what I found out in the last couple of years is that I can't handle dairy. And I was eating a lot of yogurt. And every time I ate yogurt, I would be nauseous. And I loved yogurt. It was kind of my, you know, I had it for breakfast a lot. So, and it was scary for me, but I've given that up. My stomach is much better. And then I found I haven't had bread all these years. And my sponsor and one of my sponsees are wonderful people in the program. And they work a really good program. And they are maintaining their weight. And they use Ezekiel bread. And that sort of, when I gave up dairy, I was able to add that, and it sort of balanced it off, and it's really helped me. So it's just a process. It's really a process. And you know, you can find something that works for a while, and then you get older, and maybe something happens to your body, and you can't do that the same anymore. And to me, it was so panicky. I have to say that when I was young, I thought, my mother had stomach problems too, and I thought, what if I have to give up salad? Ooh, I couldn't live without salad. And I said to myself, it's not today. And you know what? My stomach can handle salad all very easily. So it's just that we each have to find our way. And that's not, in some ways, it's not fair. You know, it's kind of like they think the alcoholic can put the monster in the cage and leave it there. We have to take it out 3 times a day and play with it, right? So that's what I believe about a plan of eating it. And I think it's really good to have somebody walk with you when you're trying to figure that out. That's why sponsors, I think, are really helpful. And then sometimes professionals that are going to help you with that. Because I, you know what? It isn't, this obsession of my mind can make me so crazy about my food that I could tell myself all kinds of things. So having somebody to walk through that with you is really imperative, I think. I want to tell a couple of things about sponsoring. I think that I'm a teacher, and whenever I go into the classroom, I have to have a lesson plan, and because I want to be sure that I'm getting I want it to be a tool of learning for people. Back in the days when I was teaching, and I think sponsorship is one of the best tools to learn all kinds of things in this program. First, when you have a sponsor, they're really there to give you direction and support and love and encouragement. But sometimes it doesn't work. Sometimes it might work for a while and then this person isn't working for you anymore. And boy, that was a tough thing for me to deal with. That I can't have that person for my sponsor anymore. And how do I do that? And how do I get through that process? I think of sponsorship as really my learning all kinds of information. And also learning that my sponsor can be really helpful in some ways, but some things she can't really be of help to me for. That doesn't mean she's not bad. See, one of my things I had to learn is you take what you like and leave the rest, right? That sponsors are people and they make mistakes. Sometimes our sponsor goes out and eats, and then what do we do? You know, that kind of thing. So I've had a lot of sponsors over the years, and now I have, I'm also an Al-Anon, so I'm grateful to have a sponsor who is active in OA. That's her primary addiction, and she's also active in Al-Anon. That's really helped me because they go together. And then, you know, so there's a lot of things about having a sponsor. But one of the things I really try to use as a rule of thumb is I don't like having a sponsor who doesn't have a sponsor. That's kind of a criteria for me. Okay. I had a wonderful sponsor for a number of years, and she got me through some really hard times, but she quit going to meetings, and I still love her. We don't see one another often anymore, but she was just the right person for that time, exactly the person I needed at that time. And then she quit going to meetings, and you know, she's never gained her weight back. She said, Karen, and she's 10 years older than me, so she said, Karen, those principles are in me, and I live them all the time. And she's retired, and they traveled, and all that kind of thing. So I still love her, but she couldn't be my sponsor when she wasn't going to meetings. That didn't work for me. So, okay, enough for sponsorship. Meetings, I think that's the one thing I've done better. Of all the tools, I've been more consistent to that than anything. And meetings are just incredibly important. Because the first thing that happened for me is I lost that feeling that I was the only one. When I came to these meetings and I heard people sharing, I thought, oh my gosh, I'm not alone. That was probably the biggest gift that came early in program from that. And then the other thing is that I watched other people grow. Right before my eyes, I saw people that were growing and changing. What a gift that was. And encouraged me in the hope that this program really works. Another thing that the meetings do is I don't get to pick what people say. I can choose what books I read. I can choose lots of things. But when I go to a meeting, I'm not in charge of that. And I think that's great because I get the messages I need to hear. There's an old timer I heard speak at an AA convention one time, and he said he was a real low bottom drunk, and he was on the streets and everything, and he had a Gestapo kind of sponsor that just told him everything to do, and he had to go to meetings every day, and had been doing that for quite a while, and one night he just decided he wasn't going to go. I mean, he was sober, and his wife was gone, and he was going to stay home and watch TV. And he said he knew his sponsor would call him, but so right after the meeting was over, he gets this phone call, and he said, you didn't come to the meeting. And he said, no, you know, real defensive, no, I didn't. I just needed to stay home tonight. And he said, oh, too bad. And he said, what do you mean? He said, too bad, you missed it. And he said, well, what did I miss? And he said, I don't know. I heard what I needed, but you didn't. I only think that I go to meetings when I, the only time I need to go to meetings is when I feel like it and when I don't feel like it. Yeah. All right, then the next one is a telephone. And I think that we all talk about the 2,000-pound telephone. You can tell I'm a talker, so telephone isn't as difficult for me. The only time it's really difficult is when I'm struggling with something. And when I'm struggling with something, I don't want to tell you. Even my sponsor, I don't want to tell you. I just want to isolate. But what I think about that is that if I talk to people on a regular basis, if I have people that I call when there's no big thing going on, then I feel safer to call them when I'm hurting. And the other thing that happens is I know how much better it feels if I do it. It's kind of like knowing if you have a problem with somebody, if you do something, you want to do it, this thing, but you know you're going to have to make amends if you do. So you think, oh, maybe not, you know. And I think that's true with telephone calls. You really find, we used to call it those of you who've been around a while, we used to call it the little meetings in between the big meetings, right? Do you remember that, Bridget? Yeah, the little meetings in between the big meetings. And I think it's really been helpful for me. I had to learn a lot about telephone calls too. And this, I forgot to talk about me being a sponsor. I've really learned a lot from being a sponsor. And one of them is I can't have too many sponsees. I have to learn that I have to say no, or I'm too busy. I've had to figure out ways because it's not an exact science. Sometimes I turn people away because I have too many and then a bunch of people will drop and that person was really ready, you know, so I found out that when I talk to somebody, usually I say, really can't, I have enough sponsees now, but I'd help you. You can call me and we'll help you find a sponsor. But also I've had people that I've just said, well, I don't know if it's going to work, but let's talk together for a while, and then we'll decide whether it's going to work for you and for me, because I'm really busy, those kinds of things. I also had to learn to tell people, and this is with telephones and sponsoring, I had to tell people when I wasn't able to talk. Sometimes there are things going on in my family and in my life at the moment, even if it's a time I scheduled to talk to somebody. And so I had to learn that when I take a sponsee on, I try now to explain to them that I really want to take your calls, but sometimes I may be too busy, and I'm going to tell you that right up front. And I know that it might be real important, so I really want you to have other numbers to call. Not just when I'm busy, but other times you need other things to call. And then I had to follow through on that. See, that's scary. I have to tell you a funny story. It's a little crude, but I think we can take it. I thought that if somebody called me, I had to talk, no matter what happened. And this was in the days before we had cell phones and answering machines. And this lady called me in the night, and she was really struggling with her abstinence, and she called me about 10:30 at night, and she said, I answered it phone by the bed. And she said, Karen, I'm standing in front of Safeway and I know I'm gonna go in there and I'm gonna, you know, I know I'm gonna binge my brains out. And so I talked to her because I thought I had to talk to her. You know, but afterwards I thought, that's too crazy. My husband and I were having sex. And by the time I was done with the phone, the thrill was gone. You know. And I decided, Karen, that's not working good for you. And so that was how I learned. And I remember one time selling. I have a thing about doctors. I don't know, when I was younger, doctors were kind of like under the angels. There was God, and then there were the angels, and then there were the doctors. And a lot of us thought so, and a lot of them thought so too. But when I first got into OA, I had this wonderful doctor who really was—he just was so thrilled with our program. And he said, "Karen, I am so happy with your program because," he said, "I have a number of diets in the drawer, any one of them which would work for my patients. But the problem with most of my patients is not that they don't have the right diet. The problem is they can't stay with it. And he was just great. And then one day he called me. He called me. Has your doctor ever called you when you didn't call him first or reported something? He called me. Oh my gosh. He said, Karen, I have a patient, and you know I would never give out your name to anybody or your number. You know I wouldn't. But I have this patient that is so struggling, and she needs your program. Would it be okay if I gave her your number? Oh, brother. I thought this was a mission from God, right? So I said, sure, you know. And then this lady called me, and it happened to be somebody I knew from my church. Not very well, but I just knew her a little bit. And I had to fix her, right? After all, my doctor asked me, right? I didn't have any Al-Anon back then. And so I went to her house to help her figure out her food plan. I mean, it was just nuts. And she didn't stick around and everything, but I learned from that. See, that's the part, if I can remember, that even though things seem like a mistake and they don't work out, I learned so much from that. I don't do that anymore. And then later, I had a person in OA who was a doctor, and she wanted me to sponsor her. Ooh-wee. That was hard for me. And one of the first things she wanted me to sponsor, I had to tell her, you know, sometimes I won't be able to talk. And she said, that's okay. So this one evening, she was scheduled to call me, and I said, you know, I really can't talk right now because my grown children and their families are here. And I think they're going to be leaving in about 45 minutes. You could call me back. So she did, and they were gone. And I said, I'm sorry, they're not gone. How about if I call you back when I'm free? She said, sure. And the thing that was so cool for me was that she said, Karen, I want to thank you. And I said, what do you mean? And she said, I want to thank you that you were honest with me. Because now I know that when you are there for me, it's okay, and I'm not bothering you. And so when I was in my stuff, when I was people-pleasing, all that stuff, I just thought I had to be there. Well, that's not honest. And when I say I can be there for you and my family's doing things, I'm not there for you and I'm not there for them and I'm not there for me. And it hurts all of us. That's one. See, sponsoring teaches you a lot. And telephone calls teach you a lot. And then the literature, I know that I'm skipping over. The literature is just amazing to me. It's something I can have always with me. One of the things I've had to learn for literature is that people read a lot of all kinds of literature, but in our meetings we only use OA-approved literature, and that's hard, because sometimes in meetings people will come and they'll start reading out of the Bible or some self-help book, and we've had to be the ones that said, you know, we don't use that literature here. And people have wanted to have, you know, self-help books on the table, and I had to say, you know what, not just me, but we had to follow the traditions and say, you know, because of the singleness of purpose, not because those things aren't okay or people don't use them outside. And so, see, every one of these tools are just lesson plans. We just didn't make them, you know. I think higher power made them. All right. And I want to tell you a story about anonymity. I always thought that, you know, there's so much more to this. It's a spiritual foundation of all of our principles, it says in the 12th tradition. And I thought, well, I don't care if anybody knows I go to OA. I would tell people, you can break my anonymity anytime. But I learned the discipline of not breaking other people's anonymity, and I'm really grateful for that. I have problems with my mouth. Only what goes in it and what comes out of it. So anonymity has been a really good discipline for me to practice, so that I don't say things that it's not appropriate to say. If I do, I have to make amends. So I don't like that. I remember one time I was at a wedding and there were people from my church that I hadn't seen for years, and it was one of my friend's daughter. And these people wanted to know how I knew. Well, hi, how are you? Why are you here? Oh, I'm a friend of the bride's mother. oh, well, how did you know her? You know, and then they went back to the table, and then they came back and they said, did she teach with you? And it was so fun. I just grinned inside because I just said, oh, she's just a friend. And it felt so good to be disciplined like that. And I got chuckling inside. People really want to know. Okay, but the other thing that happened to me is I had my anonymity broken one time. And it wasn't anybody in program. I went into the grocery store, and it was when my sons were teenagers. And it's a place I always bought my groceries. And I was about to check out, and this couple came in, and she saw me, and she recognized me. I knew her mother pretty well from our church, but didn't know her very well. She came to OA for maybe a couple months, and so she saw me, and she said, oh, Karen, how are you? Across the, you know, real loud across the rest of the store. And then she yelled her husband across the store. She was here, he was over there. This is Karen, and she's from OA. And he says, what the hell is OA? And she said, oh, that's that place where fat people go. And you can see it didn't work very well for me and her, you know, because I wasn't at my lowest weight. And he said, well, if she's in that, how come she has that full a cart of groceries? And, you know, it hurt a lot. And it not only hurt me, but I felt like I'd let OA down. And the fellow that was checking me out said, oh, Karen, I'm sorry. I'll get you through here as fast as I can. He said, everybody know they're drunks. And they've been in the tavern all day. And that's, you know. So, but I learned out of that my anonymity is really precious. Not just yours, but mine is too. So all of these are for learning, right? Service, we know. Somebody talked about that. They were in OA and it was service that kept them there the first few years. Somebody was sharing that last night. And I think that, and then everything I've needed to learn how to do differently in my real life, I believe I've had to practice in program. And these tools have made me practice it. And then when you get into, there's all kinds of service, but when I got to the place where I was going to Region 1 conventions, where's Debbie? it was uncomfortable because people disagreed. Big time, you know. And I didn't like disagreeing, and I didn't like confrontation, and it felt icky to me. But they have a way to deal with that there. And when I saw them have things that were really emotional for a lot of us, they have the mics on this side for pro and the mics on that side for con, and so many people get to do pros, and so many, and then that's it. They only have so much time, and then we vote. And then afterwards, the people that were on both sides went out to dinner together and had a good time. And I thought, what's that? You know. And so there's things, every part of a service that you do, it gives you so much. It has given me so much education, so much growth, so much, so many things that helped me to survive and to grow. And then I want to say the last one, and well, I'm not going to talk about writing because later on this afternoon we're going to talk about writing. It's one of my favorite tools and I don't want to go into it. But I've asked one person who would share, when we talk about telephone calls, that's been around a long time, but we have a new tool now, right? That we didn't have before. And the internet and email, right? Barb, would you be willing to come and share? Can she have my mic? Marcia, could she use my mic?
Oh, sorry, sure. Yeah. Well,
she can just hold it, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, right there. You hearing me?
So this is the mic for everyone else. This is for the recording. I'm just going to step and introduce yourself.
Okay. Hi there, I'm Barbara. I'm a recovering compulsive overeater and food addict.
As close as you can, that's good.
Okay. I usually have no problem with voice volume. So one of the things that I've found very useful I was laid up with back trouble. Some of you know I had back surgery in June. And I was almost homebound for quite a while. I think it started in about early March of last year, and it lasted until I had the surgery in June. And I found that I missed my connections to the program. A couple of times people actually brought me a meeting, which is great, but twice in 4 or 5 months was not going to cut it for me. And so I was looking for ways I could plug into program. And part of the problem, some people think, oh, I don't want to know about that because I'd rather go to face-to-face meetings. Well, what about the times when you have a bad cold or the times you're having a family emergency and can't get to one? So I started looking for the online. And it's not on the OA website. It's on a different website. But it's totally OA. I do leadership. One of my very newest favorite things is I now work with newcomers online. And if you don't think that isn't a rush, it is amazing. I am meeting people from all over the world, literally. And it dawned on me one day that I was actually making a difference in the world, literally. People from Australia, Great Britain, Israel, the country of Jordan. And I talked with this woman on a chat for 15 or 20 minutes about OA, and she and I totally related. It was amazing. It's just like art and music. It very much translates. And students overseas, Germany, Great Britain gets a fair number of people. So it is amazing. You just sit there and talking, and you can tell when they start talking about their mum that they're probably from England, you know. And I have found that an incredible resource. They have meetings every 3 hours around the clock. It is strictly text. It runs a step a week, and right now, this is Saturday. We're at the end of the fourth step. Monday starts the fifth step, and it means that the sharing will be focused on that, but that any recovery topic is always okay. And I always tell people when they first try it, just be an observer. Just log on to the meeting and sit there and see what we do. And that way you can pick up on what the room rules. There's no interruptions. One of my favorite parts of it, if an intruder comes in and I'm a leader, I can kick them out. So it's a very safe site. And we get these people occasionally. And I think I got one the other day. And I said if she continued, I would have to kick her out. And I did. So I've just found that an incredible resource. And I wasn't sure at first, oh, the computer kind of not person to person. But I'll tell you, when you have that as a choice, as opposed to not going at all, I'll take the computer, thank you. And it has been a huge, huge fact. I go to daily meetings, either in person or online. It's part of my program. So I value this resource incredibly. And I think the worst thing that could happen to me is if my computer crashed. But I've also realized that I can run to the library and go to that meeting also, because it's the computers nowadays in the libraries are very private, and you can log on to a meeting every 3 hours, and actually in between times it's a chat room, so you can log on and see what they're chatting about recovery, and that's 24 hours a day. We recently had marathons. We had a Christmas Day, though, and you can't call it Christmas Day when you do a worldwide program. So it was, a holiday marathon. New Year's was okay. We recently did OA birthday marathon. And then the last one probably for the season will be what I call the love-a-thon, because Valentine's Day is not a worldwide holiday. So it's amazing what you can plug into and the richness you've got. I have gotten more words of wisdom off my computer screen when I can't get to those meetings. I still have a stamina issue. Sometimes my stamina goes out the window about 4 p.m. and sometimes I can't go to the meeting. So I can always sit there in my robe and slippers and go to a meeting, or at 3 a.m. or at midnight. So I highly encourage you. I'll talk to the retreat, a couple of people about, I can post the website, it's just that I can't pass out flyers. We are linked to the OA website, so that's a concern. So just wanted to share that with you.
Thanks, Barb. I'm going to unhook you.
Okay, good. I'm glad because I almost walked off.
You wouldn't have gone far.
Barbara shared that with me during the group time, and I just thought, oh boy, perfect time to share that. I went to the International Business Conference for OA, and you know, it was the first time I got to go because I've always been involved in education, and I can't get away and couldn't get away in May, and it was, to me, one of the most touching things. We talked a lot about international. There were people from all around the world. And how it must feel, how it feels when you can't get the information, the books or the literature in your language. So OA as an organization is really working on that. And there was so many good things, but my favorite experience with that was a woman from South America. One of the South American countries. Do you remember Deb? Was it Brazil? Anyway, she didn't speak any English at all. And there were a couple of people who spoke Spanish and would help her, but she went through the business, she flew here, went through that week of this OA business conference all by herself and didn't understand English and couldn't speak English. And Barbara just said it, I said, when you're online, how do you do that with other, and she said, we speak OA. And you know, she was precious, and she sat by me one time, and every time I saw her in the hall, I would go over, you know, just give her a hug, and we'd smile. That was the only way we could communicate. And the last day, she wanted to be sure she got a picture of me, and I got a picture of her on my phone. It was just this loving, and you know, I think that's grace, and then I'm going to shut up. That's one of the greatest gifts of Overeaters Anonymous, is it is a gentle, loving program. And a lot of the things we're asked to do are not easy. They're not easy. But there's always been somebody. And you know, I've been around a long time, and a lot of the faces are different, but I've never had to go through something when there weren't programmed people to walk alongside me. And I don't expect them to do my work. And there had been a time I would have wanted them to, but then I wouldn't have liked it what they said. So I don't expect them to do my work, but they love me while I do. While I flounder and fall down and whatever, they're there. And I remember the night that I told my husband that I really couldn't be with him. I planned it so that it was right before an OA meeting. And I held myself together through the whole thing, and I walked into that meeting, and it hadn't started yet, and I just started bawling, just bawling, bawling, bawling. I couldn't talk. They didn't know what happened, but they just said, Karen, this is a safe place. And they just loved me through that, and that's the kind of thing that happens in a way for me.